It's clear to you that de-icing the wings will not be done in a jiffy. You look for phone outlets, but see none. Only photos of phone outlets. A voice announces your gate is now 39C, 12B, 9A. It's like musical chairs, if musical chairs made you sob in the pet relief area. A child picking his nose stares. His parents have abandoned him. The airport will raise him now.
Don't let flight delays ruin your vacation. Go on a real vacation. GoRVing.com.
This is the 5 a.m. Hustle Podcast.
Get ready to learn about entrepreneurship and self-help
in the new era. I'm your host, Jack Considine.
And I'm Namish Kaista.
Let's go.
Welcome back, hustlers, to the 5 a.m. Hustle Podcast. I'm your host, Namish.
And I'm Jack.
Our guest today is Brian Clayton. He's CEO and co-founder of GreenPal, an online marketplace that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals. Thanks for joining us today, Brian.
Namish, thanks for having me on. Great to be here, guys.
Yeah, awesome. So why don't you go ahead and just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I'm co-founder and CEO of a company called GreenPal. And so GreenPal is the mobile app that works like Uber, but for lawn mowing. So if you need to get your grass cut, rather than calling around on Craigslist or Facebook or stuff like that, you just download our app, pop your address in, and somebody comes out and mows your yard for you. I guess you could say we're like a 10-year overnight success. We've been at this thing for almost a decade. Now we're nationwide in the United States, a few hundred thousand people using that app. And we have self-funded the business the whole way. We haven't raised any outside capital and now doing over $20 million a year in annual revenue. Before GreenPal, I actually had a lawn mowing business that I ran in high school and in college, and over a 15-year period of time, built up the lawn care business to one of the largest in the state of Tennessee where I live. Eventually getting that company over 150 employees, around $10 million a year in revenue. And in 2012, that company was acquired by one of the largest landscaping companies in the United States. So I've spent like 22 years in one industry. I've seen it from every angle you can see it from, and never had a job, always ran my own business. And I guess good thing I found entrepreneurship early, because that's the thing that's like made my life interesting. It's the thing that's gave me like opportunities in life that I otherwise never would have had. So I'm very fortunate.
Talk about your mindset in high school. So you first decided you're going to get into kind of the lawn care business, just mow some lawns in your neighborhood, I'm sure. When did you make that transition from I'm just going to make some money, say over the summer, to I'm creating a business?
Yeah, great question. So really early on, I got bit by the entrepreneurial bug. You know, when I mowed my first yard, my dad actually made me go cut the neighbor's yard one day. And he said, hey, get off your ass. You got a gig to do. You're going to go mow the neighbor's yard. And I made like $20 and I got hooked ever since then. And I thought, man, this is great. I can just work as hard as I want. And I can make as much money as I want. And so like, it just made sense to me. It clicked. And I just stuck with that, you know, through high school. And then when I got in college, I went to business school and I kind of understood, started learning a little bit what it meant to run a business, and not necessarily the difference between like being self-employed and running and owning a business, and started to make sense of that. And I guess it was like maybe right as I was about to graduate college, I had to make a decision. Was I going to go into the job market and take like a pay cut, or was I just going to stick with this lawn mowing business? By that time, I had two or three employees. And I was doing pretty good. I didn't really want to be a lawn guy. I didn't really want to be like a landscaper my whole life, but I thought this could be the thing, that is like going to take me places in life. This could be my lane. Like, and I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, I guess you could say. And I thought, well, what the hell? I'm just going to work my butt off and work as hard as I can and build the biggest, most profitable landscaping company in our market. And, I don't know if I got there, but I got pretty close. You know, we had like one of the largest landscaping companies in Middle Tennessee, and we were profitable every year. And I guess you could say I had a chip on my shoulder in the early years. And as time went on, I started growing that business from just me and like a few helpers to me and 10 people, 20 people, 50 people. You know, that your kind of purpose in business kind of evolves, and it became more or less about, okay, this company is about the people that work here and not necessarily about myself. It's bigger than me. And then it became about like just like creating a standard of excellence and like creating something that I was proud of. And that was a lot of fun. And so like if you're doing business correctly, every two or three years, you should evolve into a whole new person, and you should grow along with the business. And that definitely has been the case with me 20 years running a couple different companies.
I think that's what's so unique about business as well, is that it's one of the few places where you can find that you're continually rebuilding yourself over and over again, and truly rebuilding yourself, right?
Yep.
It's not like I know investment banking works like, it's very like structured like school almost. It's like, if you stick around for like these 2 years, you're going to get a raise unless you really fuck up. And then like, if you stick around for like 5 or 10 years, you probably become a partner unless you like mess up. Nothing is guaranteed, I feel like, in business, and you continually have to evolve yourself that way.
Absolutely. And the business is a relentless arbiter of feedback, and like the marketplace is going to tell you where you suck. The marketplace is going to tell you where you have to work and where you have to make improvements, not necessarily on the business, you know, but really on yourself. Like, you know, if you're running a company with more than 2 employees, you got to start learning skills around management and leadership, and pick up books on leadership and develop your leadership style when you might not have ever done that. And so the marketplace and the business is going to extract that from you. It's going to cause you to level up. And that's one of the cool things I like about it. And, you know, when I made the transition from, after I sold my first landscaping business and made the transition to running a tech company, you know, I had to like reinvent myself as an entrepreneur. I had to learn how to code, how to build software, how to design software. And that was like a 3-year process. And I never would have read books on software design and software engineering, you know, had I not gotten into the trenches of starting that company. And like I said, I think like every 3 or 4 years, you totally level up. And like, there's this like step into another paradigm. And like the company is what brings you through that. And, you know, you guys look young, you know, I assume, you know, you're in your early 20s. There is a myth that's being perpetuated that like your 20s is this time where you can just kind of figure yourself out and like, da, 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 and like, don't worry about it. You got plenty of time. Trust the process. And I really try to, every chance I get, try to dispel that myth. Like, no, your 20s is the time to build your foundation, so then you can take a bigger swing at the fences in your 30s and 40s. Like, that's when you have the most energy. That's when you can take the most risks. That's when you can move the quickest. Like that decade is critical to building your foundation and learning and getting some experience and getting a company going.
Yeah. For sure. Something unique that you said was you didn't have any experience in software coding, and you really had to take the time to go learn that. And it reminded me of something I heard a couple of days ago, which was Gary Vee talking about how he first heard about NFTs like 9 months ago, didn't know what they were. And then he took like 50 to 100 hours just dedicating his time to learning what they were. And he's made $90 million off it since then. Like, just because he understood it and was able to execute it. And in 90 days, he made $90 million pretty much. And it's just ridiculous. And it goes to show that sometimes you have to learn the skills that you never thought were necessary to either make your business go to the next level yourself or whatever. And it's just so unique to see that happen in different facets of business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe in business, you're going to be doing 3 things at once. You're going to be working in the business. That's like whatever it is it does, you know, especially in the early days. Like, for instance, my lawn mowing business, I was mowing yards. You're going to be working on the business, you know, that's systems, processes, routines, what your marketing system look like, what your customer service system look like. Even if it's just you, you got to have these like routines and processes. And then the third thing is you're going to be working on yourself, which is reading books, listening to audiobooks, going to conferences. Maybe you can't afford to go to the conference, so then you watch it on YouTube 6 months later. You know, YouTube University, all these things, listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to be working on yourself. And the reality is, it's like, there's just not enough time for this like work-life balance thing where, you know, you just kind of put in 30 or 40 hours a week and be able to do all of these things. Like, literally, it's a 7-day-a-week thing. And if you really want to level up, particularly, you know, in your 20s and 30s, you're going to have to set aside time on Saturdays and Sundays to work on yourself, to set aside time to read books, to set aside time to go to YouTube University, to set aside time to like turn off Netflix and turn on something, you know, like a webinar or something that you need to like learn a skill that relates to whatever stage of the game that you're in. You know, similar to like, you know, I wish I had a Gary Vee story where I made $90 million in 90 days, but like one thing I had to do when I was building GreenPal was I had to learn how to be a decent copywriter, because you really start to learn about how important words are on an interface, and you start to learn it. Like, that's an inflection point where you can apply some effort and get huge gains in terms of changing and tweaking copy. So I spent 6 months and took every course I could on copywriting, and some of them sucked, but some of them were really good and helped me develop my style in copywriting. And the reality is, it's like, if you want to start a tech company or you want to start a certain kind of business, do you have to be an engineer? Do you have to be a designer? Do you have to have these labels? Not necessarily, but you do need to know like the 80-20 of these things and be good enough to understand like how they work, how they tick, to where you can be dangerous and where you can delegate them effectively later on.
Yeah. So I had a question of that. How did your challenges and obstacles change as you continue to evolve from company one, company two, all the challenges and all the level ups that you did within them?
Yeah. You know, building my first business, you know, 150 employees, 8 figures in revenue. My payroll was like $100,000 a week. And you sell a company like that, and then you think you know everything there is to know about business. Like at least that's the way I felt. Like I had sold that company, and it was like the biggest acquisition in that industry and like maybe even a decade. And so here I am, like I'm riding my high horse, and then I thought, well, you know, I'm gonna start a tech company because I think that'll be easier than what I just did. And quickly did that and recruited 2 co-founders, got in the game and started hustling on that. And I was confronted with the reality that I didn't know shit. Like I literally didn't know the first thing about how to do any of this stuff. And it was very humbling. And I think that's one of the cool things about running a company or starting a new tech company is like, it's the most humbling thing you can do with your life. So that was a good thing. And that was kind of what I needed at that time. And then you're confronted with like this whole new world of challenges. And, you know, I didn't know how software worked. I didn't know how to design software. I didn't know how to recruit engineers and how to do all this stuff. So I had to like get in the game and start learning and rinse and repeat. And so some of the challenges were, you know, there's a big difference between running a successful business, small business, traditional business, and doing that well, and then inventing a new product from scratch that does not yet exist. I didn't really understand the difference between those two. So, you know, it's one thing to like run a successful small company, but then it's another to invent a brand new product and get people to use that. And I guess I kind of had to like learn the hard way how to do that. Read every book I get my hands on, like Lean Startup, another book called Startup Owner's Manual, which is the predecessor to that book. And one thing they really teach you is that when you're inventing a brand new product, the only thing you have to go on is customer feedback. You have to go out and solicit that customer feedback, what they call get out of the building. And that was just like a new skill I had to learn, was letting customers tell me what kind of company, what kind of product I had to build. And I had never done that before. And so that was a challenging thing that I had to overcome like the first 2 or 3 years of building GreenPal, my co-founders and I. And it was just like a relentlessness and an unwillingness to like not be successful is what got us through those first 2 years.
And I think something you mentioned about the whole education part of entrepreneurship, and a lot of entrepreneurs have to fail over and over again because they don't have the proper education, because there's really not much education to be an entrepreneur. And nowadays, the ecosystem of like the self-help and the entrepreneurship books and leadership that are all around are pushed a lot heavily early in the process, so that when you're starting your business, you know about it. It's not that like once you finally get a mentor that says, hey, read these books, they tell you. It's like Namish and I are 19 years old and we're already starting to read these books and try to develop these skills at an earlier age, instead of doing it when we're like older. Like you're talking about your 20s when you learn and take risks. And it's just very different from the old thing where you just start a business and hope it does well, and then you kind of learn those skills later on.
Yeah, I think so. There is no book that's going to like, there's just no one book you can read that's just going to like teach you how to build a successful company, whether it's a tech company, whatever. But there are a lot of practitioners, you know, online. They have courses. Most of them suck, but there are a lot of people talking about certain facets of what the skills that you need to build one of these things. And so like the only way you're going to learn how to do it is to literally get started and not give up. It's kind of like the only way to learn how to fight is to spar. And it'd be like somebody fighting an MMA fight and they go into the octagon and they had read every book on jiu-jitsu style and Muay Thai style and grappling, and they watched every YouTube video on breaking down fights, and they you know, they practice all the theory, but they have never sparred. And so then they go into the octagon and, you know, they're going to get their ass handed to them, because the only way you learn how to fight is to actually fight. Well, business is just like that. And the only way you learn how to do this stuff is to actually get in there, build a product, and then make some money. Like, you will learn so much more about what it means to start and run a successful business, building a product and getting $100 or $1,000 in revenue, than you will in 4 years of business school. And there's a lot of these things kind of manifest themselves in like weekend hackathons and stuff. They used to be really popular about 5-10 years ago. I don't know if they are anymore, but you'll learn more about like just trying to get a product off the ground in 48 hours and like get 12 people to use it than you will in like 2 years of business school. And that's the reality of it. It's like, it's a combination of experiential wisdom, which is getting a product in the hands of users. And then also like allocating the time where there's 2 hours a day, 10 hours a week to go down the rabbit hole and listen to practitioners of this stuff. So it could be like, you know, if you're focusing on the engineering side, the dev side, there is an endless amount of knowledge online that you can learn for free. If you're trying to like learn the growth side and the marketing side, again, an endless amount of knowledge. And maybe you're focusing just on SEO, or you're focusing just on Facebook ads or just Google ads or whatever. You can become an expert in these things online, in most cases for free. And so it's a combination of like getting into the octagon, fighting, and then learning from your mistakes after the fight, after you lost. Okay, what did I do wrong? Let me learn from people who know how to do this stuff better than me. It's a combination of both those things. And you can't have one without the other. Like, somebody just goes in there and just bangs their head against the wall and is not going to they try to start a product and then like they bang a head against the wall and they don't learn product design, they're never going to be successful. You have to do both. One way I got over this was when I was starting GreenPal, I knew we didn't want to raise money. I didn't want to like go down that route because I saw that as a bad bet. And I saw a lot of startups failing because they had raised too much capital. So I knew
why is that?
Because in most cases, like, just put a pin in that. So in most cases, start like raising capital for an idea is a bad bet if you just look at like the numbers holistically. Like, take for example, Y Combinator. Like, this is the NFL of the NFL, the cream de la cream of startup incubators, and you know, Airbnb, DoorDash, Instacart, Stripe, Reddit. You name it. Like there's probably 100 names that really matter in the world. And these guys were like the seed capital and incubator for all of them. And then you're like, wow, well then I just need to do that. Well, what you don't realize is like those dudes have like funded 4,000 companies in the last 15 years. And so it's like 100 or 50 or 100 names that matter out of 4,000. And so those other 3,990 went to zero. Or maybe they got even money back, but the reality is most of them like wasted a decade of their life, you know, or 5 years on that thing. And a lot of times it's because they set off this chain reaction of events. When you raise a seed round, you have to like do everything you can to raise a series A, and you have to do everything you can to raise a series B. It's almost like a get rich or die trying. And I'm not against it, you know, like when it works, it's beautiful. And you know, if you look at your phone, probably every app on the home screen was venture backed. And so when it works out, it's great and everybody gets rich. But the reality is that 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work. And the entrepreneur is there, you know, with their marriage in shambles, their house is mortgaged, like they have literally poured their soul into this thing and have been defeated because they tried to like pour rocket fuel into a Toyota Camry and wondered why it didn't work. And so that's the reality. Now, if you want to raise capital, that's great. Go for it. Swing for the fences. But you need to know what the dynamics of that look like. And you need to also consider, would it be better to fund this business off of its own revenues? And so for us, you know, we're doing multiple 8 figures a year in revenue. There's 3 names on our cap table. and like my co-founders and I own the entire business, and we can do whatever we want. Whereas, you know, we have like other contemporaries in the space that have raised $30, $40, $50 million in capital, and they're no further along than we are. In some cases, they're behind us. And it's because like that necessity is the mother of invention is very real, and it's focused us on one thing. It's like the customer. Whereas if you raise capital and kind of paper over those things and kind of cause you to lose your way and also cause you to lose your company, you know, like if you don't do the right things, make the right bets with that money, you know, you can be replaced as CEO and be washed out, you know, through subsequent rounds of funding. So I'm not anti-VC. That's just not the route I wanted to go building this company at and how we wanted to build it. That said, one thing we did to kind of like hustle our way through a lot of the things that you know, we would normally throw money at, you know, is like, you normally you would hire like a chief of product that knows what the hell they're doing. We couldn't do that. We had to figure out how to become our own chief of product. What I did was I looked at well-funded startups. I looked at, you know, other companies in similar spaces like Rover, Wag. They were like Uber for dog walking. So I signed up and I walked dogs on Rover and walked dogs on Wag and went to people's houses and babysat their pets for them. And in some cases stayed overnight doing that and learned so much about product design, because here these guys, you know, raised $300 million from SoftBank. They had a whole team, you know, trying to pull off Uber for dog walking. I could learn, you know, how they crafted interfaces, how they dealt with retention, how they dealt with activation, how they dealt with copywriting and all these things. So, and I did that same thing with DoorDash, Postmates, Uber, Lyft, you name it. Every peer-to-peer local on-demand gig economy app that existed, I used and did like breakdowns of every screen, took screenshots of every screen and did like teardowns of every one of them on both sides of the market, you know, on the demand side and on the supply side. Learned so much doing that, applied all of that, you know, collectively, I probably used the apps of somewhere around, you know, $5 to $10 billion of venture capital, you know, birthing these things from the ground. And so I was able to apply kind of like their best practices, what we were doing in lawn care. And that was one way we kind of hacked our way through product design. So point is that you don't have to go raise a bunch of capital. If you're scrappy enough, you can kind of do these things yourself and fund the business off of its own revenues along the way. And then you own it all and you're kind of in charge, which is where we're at now.
It's an interesting thing right now because I go to school at Ohio State University. And here there's kind of both, like you said, we do have like hackathons that we're invited to and kind of get to go witness and be a part of. But then there's also a very big ecosystem of people pushing, like get into startups, get into venture-backed capital, get all these like these pitch competitions. And it's really interesting for me right now to see like who is going into these hackathons with the mentality of, I just want to learn as much as possible and then apply it to the business I'm making, or I just want to get as much money as possible and as much help as possible to like launch my business. And it's just very interesting because there's like one guy that I met that actually has a successful startup right now that's he's launching in a couple months, but he already is backed by a very successful product development company here. And so I think he's going to do really well, but then someone who just wants to get the money and the help may not do well because they weren't willing to do it themselves. And it's just interesting to see the dynamic at a university.
Yeah. I mean, listen, startups fail, entrepreneurs don't. And the reality is like of everything you just observed, 90% of that shit's probably going to go to zero, if not 100. But the real entrepreneurs behind those things will eventually be successful. And so it's like, particularly, this is why I preach to people in their 20s, and you guys say you're 19, even better. It's like, you're going to learn so much more working in a startup. And, you know, I mean like sub 5 or 10 people, because you get to do a lot of different things, or trying to start your own startup and not necessarily to say, I just want to learn as much as possible. Like you got to really want to be successful, because that's the only way you're going to learn. Really backs against the wall, do whatever you got to do to for that thing to be successful. And like, you don't, if somebody is will only get started if they get funded, big red flag. I mean, and you probably, and you said you observed that as like some cat, you know, it's like is waiting to get funded to start. You cannot do that. Like you have to like start it on your own. You have to get your first dozen or 100 customers. You have to like de-risk the thing. You have to get some proof points going, and then you can get funding. But if you're not willing to make the sacrifices and do the things you got to do to get there, and you're waiting on funding, then you're not an entrepreneur. And so, like, you know, and this is not, these are not like prophecies. These are not things that I have said, like Mark Cuban says, you know, if you have to ask yourself if you're an entrepreneur, then you're not, you know, like the entrepreneur is already nights and weekends working on the project. You know, the real entrepreneur can't stop thinking about the idea, or the real entrepreneur is terrified of like 5 or 10 years from now, you know, sitting in a cubicle, working, you know, some crappy job they hate. And they're willing to do the things today to change that. And so it's like, you know, the things you're observing with, you know, there might be some posers in there. There might be some, you know, there might be some real entrepreneurs in there, you know, some stupid ideas, some good ideas. Startups fail. They fail every day, but entrepreneurs don't. Eventually entrepreneurs are successful. They always are.
I want to kind of circle back to like something you said earlier, which is you started to try to create a standard of excellence within what you were building. How did you do that?
Yeah, it's like, for me, like my companies, you know, and I've only had two, my first landscaping business and now GreenPal. They're like me, and it's scaffolding around me. So if like part of it sucks, I'm personally offended. So like I have like personal, like vested stock in the quality and in like, if it's helping people, like for GreenPal, like our mission is to help small landscapers make more money with like a fraction of the headache and to make material income and help them get into the landscaping business and make real revenue. And so that's why we do what we do. I mean, we offer a nice convenience for homeowners to use the app. And so like, that's my soul like poured into that. And so I think as the founder, as a CEO, you know, after you get the ball rolling and you know, I don't code anymore. I don't write blog articles anymore. I did at one time, but now we've got a team of almost 40 people. And so now, you know, what are the things that like I have to focus on as a founder, as a CEO? And one of those is you set the standard. You set the standard of excellence. You set the standard of, okay, this is the quality of product we put out. This is the quality of customer service that we put forth. These are like the metrics that we really run the business by and try to drive. And so you as the founder, you have to set that standard. And then, you know, some of the things you said, you know, the culture is, and that dovetails into the standard of the business. And you know, as you grow and as you kind of like are working more on the business and on yourself and less in the business, these are the things you worry about. These are the things that you focus on. And so for me, you know, the first company, now the second company, setting that standard of quality, setting that standard of excellence, whether it mean like in the work that we do every day in the company or how the company manifests itself into the hands of our customers, is very important to me. And I think it's someplace that you should always focus on, particularly after you get some momentum going, because that's where a lot of the leverage is.
Awesome. Okay. So just wrapping up, there's two questions that we ask everyone that comes on the podcast. So the first question is, what are 2 to 3 books that you've read that have had a really big impact on your perspective?
Yeah, you know, a lot of like, when it comes to books, it's like the a lot of like the good ones are the old ones. You know, it's like the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I don't know when that book came out. I think the 90s. Like, I have yet to find a better book than that. Like, that book is just all about living an effective life. And, you know, it's a long book, hard to read. You can listen to it on Audible. And I do at least once every year or two. So that one's important. And then getting more back towards like tactical, practical advice. The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. That's a book about just starting a business, what it means to own a business and not be self-employed, and knowing the difference between the two. Does that book relate to like big time tech startup land? No, but it's just good fundamentals for and block and tackling for what it means to be in business and what that looks like, because we're never taught that. Nobody teaches that in school. And then a third book, if I had to wrap it up, would be a book called Built to Sell. And that talks about how do you build a business that you can sell? You know, like, how do you build a business that you could ultimately sell one day, and what that means and how you think about that day one. It would have saved me years of headache trying to get my first company sold.
Awesome, Brian. And the last question we have for you today is, if you can go back and give one piece of advice to your teenage self, what would it be?
Be a few things. One would be like to understand like the power of compound interest. And I know that like, it's like a nebulous thing. I think Warren Buffett said compound interest was like the modern, like a wonder of the modern world. And it is, it's like, the problem with starting a company is that the numbers are so humiliatingly small in the early days that most people quit and they give up. But everything that ends up being huge starts off very small. And so for us, particularly with GreenPal, like, I mean, we ended our first year with like 27 customers. It was so laughably small. But I knew if we could double that and then double that again and then double that again, compounding would eventually kick in. And so there's been many like points in like my entrepreneurial journey where I needed that reinforced into my head. Like, the laws of compounding eventually kick in if you can just continue to grow the numbers exponentially year over year. It does, the snowball does take hold and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is why I preach like getting started early in your 20s, because it takes 5 years to get that momentum. And then, but then once those last couple top offs come, the, you know, 5 and 10 and 15 years, then that's when it gets really big. And that's when compounding really starts to take hold.
Awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And if people are going to look for you or your product, where can they find it?
Yeah. So anybody listening to this in the United States, you can just download GreenPal in the App Store or Play Store. Get hooked up with a great lawn mowing service in a minute. And then anybody wants to hit me up, I put most of my time as far as social on Instagram. You can hit me up at Brian M. Clayton.
Awesome. That's it for today's episode of the 5M Hustle podcast. As always, guys, peace. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to subscribe and rate the podcast.
Special thanks to Ayush Basu for producing social media content.
To follow us on Instagram, look up the number 5AM Hustle Podcast. And for Twitter, it is just 5AM Hustle.
Feel free to reach out to us at 5AM Hustle Podcast @gmail.com.
As always, guys, go win the day.